Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, Jackie Cation in my garage. That's right. It's the Dork Forest Rangers, and we're just going to talk. Today, we're talking with sketch comic podcaster, lefthandradio.com, Adam Bozarth. Hello, Adam Bozarth.
Hello, Jackie. I'm great. It's so great to be here to talk to you.
Yeah, super fun. I like how you framed yourself there. It's nice because it shows sort of the background as well as whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Dork Forest.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Look at. Oh,
it's that little personal touch.
It really is. It really, really is. Well played, Adam Bozarth. It's at Left Hand Radio on all the things, right? As in addition to being lefthandradio.com, it's on Instagram.
Yeah, we're on Left Handed Radio is on Instagram and Twitter, Twitch. We've taken a little bit of a break with Twitch.
Sure.
Do you do Twitch? But you're familiar with Twitch.
I'm not familiar enough with Twitch to put this on Twitch. You would think that I could, and I have all kinds of tripods, and I could just stream it live on TikTok. I could do all kinds of things. None of that's happening. So, is it left hand or left handed?
Left handed.
Oh, ED.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. I had that wrong. And let's.
It happens.
It happens. Left handed. Are you left handed?
No.
Anna?
No,
your co-host. Yes.
No, I'll tell you where the name came from. This one of the first. It used to be a bigger group of people.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, we had our friends Dan Chamberlain, Matt Little, Brett White, Taylor Moore. One of the first meetings we had where we were reading a bunch of sketches that we all had written but didn't have a place to put anything. My friend Brett White wrote this sketch where the X-Men are about to, you know, fight some bad guy, and they're in this parking lot, and they just keep commenting on how they smell weed somewhere, and they can't get it together enough to fight the villain because they're just so distracted. And I think at one point Wolverine refers to joints as left-handed cigarettes, and I was just like, that's such a great phrase.
That really is. Yeah. And something Wolverine would say.
Yeah.
It
feels Canadian, right?
It feels Canadian. It feels he's also hundreds of years old. It's a Joe Biden-y kind of thing, you know? I feel like sometimes that Wolverine is the Joe Biden of the X-Men. More powerful than you could imagine. Yeah. And yet, and yet kind of a goony bird.
Deceptively sturdy.
Deceptive and stocky. Dude's got it. So, but here's the thing. We're not here to talk about the X-Men, though I suppose we could. We're here to talk about Star Trek because that's what, have you been watching? Have you been back? Did you back up and watch a lot of Star Trek during the last 16 months?
Yeah, I had never seen, well, that's not true. I had probably watched a handful of the original series. I think I had seen the mirror episode of Star Trek.
Okay. Wait, you're talking William Shatner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe like one or two more, I think, out of curiosity, maybe to get a couple of jokes that are in other, you know, antecedent entertainment.
But right, just for research.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my partner in all things, Anna Rubinova, she was producing a Star Trek recap podcast called Treks in the City. And So so, you know, Alice and Veronica, they're great. And
I do.
Anna heard so much about this show and was just like, it sounds good. We should probably watch it. And we didn't have anything else to do for about a year and a half.
So you started, did you start with the OG? Did you start with the original Star Trek? Good call.
Exactly.
You have to fall in love before you go back.
Yes.
So what did you start with?
We started with Next Generation, and that first season is, it does feel like they're kind of warming up into stuff. Because there's like some weird first season episodes, like where they happen upon the space Irish people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of first season. There's first in sitcoms, there's first three episodes.
Yeah.
In Star Trek, there's literally first 18 to 22 episodes.
First three seasons, yeah.
Yeah, where you're just like, why are there six good things in this first two seasons or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is brutal. I don't know why I stuck it out. and I balk a little bit, even though they have gotten actually better, though. Okay, so you watch Star Trek The Next Generation, which I forget. Is there like 11 seasons of that? What are we talking?
I think off the top of my head, I want to say 9.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot.
Yeah, so who are your favorite characters? Like, who did you end up relating to or kind of, like, everyone makes fun of Wesley, but it was nice to address at all that there were any sort of children on the ship.
Yeah, I like the Crusher family.
Sure.
but, you know, it's hard not to be delighted by Data.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. Data and LaForge, actually, that the buddy movie that was never made, that'd make an excellent Marvel one-shot.
Yeah.
Just a sketch, just a small sketch with Data and LeVar Burton, because they were friends, and I like that so much.
Yeah.
What did you like? What were your favorite Data moments?
I think, Data learning to do stand-up from Joe Piscopo.
Do not remember that, and I think I've blocked it on purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Go,
really?
Go back. He's,
okay.
I mean, because it's a running theme. I feel like, you know, every time some Star Trek writer gets a hand at this cast of characters, it's always like, let's talk about how Data doesn't have a sense of humor and let's try to improve it, you know. And so the first one is him, you know, like doing a holodeck simulation of a mid-20th century stand-up performance, which I guess must have been the peak of entertainment for this 21st century robot to use it as research.
And certainly in the 90s.
Yeah.
And do you remember any of his jokes?
Oh God, I wish I could. But he does these sort of like, you know, I was so ugly as a child, they had to, you know,
doing Rodney King. It was a terrible Rodney King impression. Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
And and Fozzie Bear.
Yeah.
So sort of a little duo of that. And okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Yeah, because he wasn't a child, obviously, right? There's the twist there. Is because Data, I was so ugly as a child, but I wasn't a child because I'm Data. I was created like Venus out of the sea by his dad. Do you remember the episode where he gets to meet his dad?
Yes, that, oh God, the old age makeup on that show is worth, how is the old age makeup on Star Trek The Next Generation worse than alien makeup? Is it because
they never do it?
Right.
Yeah, this is an excellent point. This is a really good point because Andy Ashcraft, my partner in all things and loved one, is interesting because he knew someone who did makeup on that episode, on that show.
Yeah.
And so for a LARP, a live action role playing game, where when we first were dating, he had to play, it was a family dinner, and he said that he couldn't come, but he told the game master that he was, that he wanted to play, but he wanted to play as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And his backstory was that he was a woman in her 30s who had never gotten married. So she was the ugliest woman in her clan in the Appalachians. So the makeup that was done on him by this person actually worked.
Yes.
And actually was much better in real life than I've ever seen on that show. Because the Ferengi look, that's what they do when they make people old. They just sort of turn them into Ferengi. And you're like, just make him a Ferengi. Because without the big ears, it's just a lot of paste and, yeah.
Speaking of Ferengi,
Yes.
There is a story that I read somewhere on some website. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But the Ferengi were designed to become the new... They were supposed to be the big bad guy for Star Trek The Next Generation. They're in the first season, or first episode. And they're like this sort of like growly, gremlin-y sort of thing. And they were pitched by Roddenberry himself. But Roddenberry's like original description of them was like... somebody told the story where like... He goes in and he's like, the Ferengi, they're greedy. They're like little gremlin-y monsters. They're vicious. They've got the big ears. They also have super long penises, you know, like they're just,
oh my God.
Yeah. Just big penis. And then like, he goes on explaining this whole thing about how like sexually charged the Ferengi are. And then somebody had to be like, Gene, this is going to be on at 8 o'clock.
On CBS. What is happening to you and your weird dick jokes? Wow, that is so funny that because there is an episode of Next Trek where, and I call it Next Trek, other people call it Next Generation, whatever, but the it's because I grew up watching original Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So that's Star Trek. So Star Trek The Next Generation was always Next Trek to me. And then everything after that had a name.
I love Anyways, it.
And but there is an episode where there's a lot of ear talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the Umex.
Is that the name of their ears?
Well, that's the way that they make love or whatever it is, where they just get stroked on the ears. They call it Umex.
All right.
You know?
Ear stroking. Fair enough. That's, you have watched
that
it much.
Down.
I am writing that down, making sure that isn't a notice made. Because I desperately want to play a Ferengi on Lower Decks. But
yes. Oh my gosh, Jackie, you would be so good at that.
It would be perfect. I want that. I've been trying to get more into voiceover stuff and do more cartoons. I got to do the three lines on Bob's Burgers. One of them was, oh, thank you for, I do some acting.
That was you. Anyway,
that was me. Sure. You heard it. But yeah, so the Ferengi, the Ferengi are so, they're some of my favorite characters,
yes,
just because I come from salespeople, and and there's all of these sort of rules of what are the Ferengi rules called?
The rules of acquisition.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I would say of all the, and I think I started liking them most in Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
But so did you get through all of Star Trek The Next Generation?
Got through all of Star Trek Next Generation. We are almost done with Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, I think, is my favorite series. We're also like halfway through Voyager right now.
Okay, so you guys are doing a parallel track.
Yeah.
You're just like, well, let's watch an hour of that, an hour of this, an hour of that, an hour of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Voyager was my favorite for a long time, just because of it was the first woman captain.
Yes.
And Janeway was so cool.
Yes.
And I liked the Native American first officer.
Yes.
And it was just it felt, and and the doctor in that one made me laugh.
Oh yeah, Robert Picardo.
Yeah, Robert Picardo, the actor who is in everything.
Everything.
But he was wonderful actually in it, and they gave him a personality, and that was one of my favorite things about it. So who are your favorite characters in Deep Space Nine?
I think Quark, definitely Quark. Because Quark is supposed to be the comic relief. He's supposed to be this sort of like laughable character, and Armin Shimerman gives him so much like gravity. There's like an episode where we meet this woman who Quark used to be in love with, and they had to, you know, whatever, like she's like a space criminal or something, and it didn't work out. But there's this whole like what could have been and how much he loves her. And it brought tears to my eyes. And I'm like, why am I crying over Quark?
Right. You know, the thing is the greatest thing about science fiction is that it can come at you on a sideways or top down, where all of a sudden you're having emotions and you're like, that's a giant dinosaur looking dude. Why has anime brought me to tears? You know, when they spend most of their time growling at each other in the sky and then making fun of food. But but those are sweeping. I get it. People who love anime.
But I also really, really love Avery Brooks as Captain Sisko.
Yes.
He is a captivating actor. I think he's just one of those actors that like, as soon as he gets a scene, you're just like, how's he going to play it? What are these choices that he's making? He's got this incredible delivery, you know.
That's interesting. So you're looking at it from the acting perspective.
Yeah. At a certain point, I guess like maybe that's because I'm watching it now as a, you know, I don't want to say as an actor, but as a person who does acting, let's say it that way.
Right. We live in Los Angeles. Anyone could call themselves an actor.
Sure.
It's sure. What the heck?
But to hang that series on him. It's such a great, he's well cast.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that cadence, you know, like, well, not that cadence. It's like he has a cadence and a delivery that is specific onto himself, you know, like Christopher Walken or Pacino or something like that. Like he delivers lines the only way he can, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that for a show that's like basically like Space Deadwood, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's acting as hard as Al Swearengen, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Right. He is actually, he's all I know, and I don't know a lot about acting, is that that when he is on screen, that is where my focus goes.
Yes.
Like his stage presence and his screen presence, I guess, is so intense that you're like, I don't even care what he's about to say.
Yeah.
It's probably very important. So, he was easily the best thing out of Spencer for Hire.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And I couldn't watch Spencer for Hire because I had accidentally read all of the books. And so the guy who played Spencer was just a little too watered down and a little too good looking.
Mm.
And I needed him a little more grizzled, like sort of a Brian Dennehy kind of guy would have been more to my taste, I think. And and then Avery Brooks playing with Brian Dennehy would have been kind of epic because at any number of times, I don't know why I'm doing this to you, but at any, because now I'm talking about Spencer for Hire.
Please, please,
but
please.
Any time during the the books, Spencer for Hire, the character Hawk, who Avery Brooks plays, has to remind people that he's not Spencer's fucking sidekick. He's like, I am my own person over here. We are friends. I am helping him. He would do the same for me. You are out of your goddamn racist minds. And so it is, he's such a great character.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even do it enough. Like, that's where you want to, where you wish Robert, what's his face, who wrote the Spencer Pryor, would have made it part of every.
Yeah.
Would have made it, say, somehow not those words, but something like, every book that Hawk is in is actually one of the better books.
How many Spencer Pryor books are there? Like,
well, he's still writing. He's been dead for 6 years. It's an amazing, amazing work is being done. Yeah, one of those. I think they're just taking a comb and going through his notes and cobbling shit together. But I would say the first 12 are okay. Pretty good. And they're all written in the 70s and 80s. So they're, most of them are 220, like 200. They're like pulp sized.
Okay.
And I started reading them in the 70s because they sold them at Kmart, and I lost my library card for a little while, so I started stealing books from Kmart, which lowers what you read. It really narrows the field as to what you might want to start reading.
Do you mind if I ask a personal question and ask how you lost your library card?
I didn't lose it. I just didn't have, if you were late over $10, if you didn't have $10 and your fine was over $10,
whoa,
you couldn't do it until you paid it off. And
okay.
I was a child and I didn't realize that I could pay it off sort of a buck at a time or a quarter at a time. So Christmas came and the librarian actually paid my library fee for me.
Oh my gosh. That's so sweet.
It was very sweet. It was very nice. I was surrounded by very nice adults.
Yeah.
As a child, after my mother died. What? That got dark.
Everybody got so nice after that.
And everyone was like, "Oh, your dead mother. Here, have some money, or here, have a thing." Nobody did that. Okay. So, yeah. So I do. Yeah, Deep Space Nine. There are episodes of The Dork Forest entirely devoted to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah. I was sort of hoping that, like, I'd still be able to talk about it, even though that everybody is so into it, you know. Oh. I think what is so captivating about Deep Space Nine in terms of Star Trek is that it's, like, it's morally ambiguous. The good guys are sometimes bad guys, and bad guys are sometimes good guys, and it's not always happy endings and stuff like that.
It's much more political,
yeah,
and less utopian than mm-hmm. Star Next Trek, and even no, that's it was it introduced that ambiguity to it that I think was very. It's one of the reasons why some people don't like it at all,
yeah,
is because they don't feel like it's Star Trek-y enough. It's too stationary. There's a religious thing to it. And mm-hmm. then there's this political and moral ambiguity to it. And but it actually makes it more of a whole story set in the Star Trek universe
mm-hmm.
that I think is fascinating.
There's a two-parter in the middle of it, which we watched around this time last year, where a handful of the Deep Space Nine crew get thrown back to the year 2025 when Earth is in a, America is specifically in a crisis, civil upheaval and all that. And it's just like, wow, this isn't escapist anymore.
Right. We are currently, as I like to say, going through the laziest civil war I've ever seen. We don't need to hot it up, but it is pretty yeah, one off. It's artisanal. Anyway, yeah, whenever they do go back in time,
yeah,
and whatever they do discuss, because it's the gift of Star Trek. It's the gift of that they can talk about the big issues, that they can, you know, and sometimes they talk about them poorly, like some of the there's, you know, there's several episodes that are full on racist, you know, in Next Trek, and then hit and miss in every iteration since. So
yeah.
Who's your favorite in Voyager, since you're also halfway through Voyager?
I think I get most excited when it's Tuvok Tuvok involved.
Oh, yes.
Because he's so sarcastic. And it's like, I get it's supposed to be the Vulcan sort of like logical superiority. But I think Tim Russ is playing him sarcastic and aggravated and aggrieved. And it's just, you know, like you can tell all of the stuff is getting to the character, but he plays it like it's not. But every word, all of his word choices are very passive aggressive. and he's just like, well, I'm sorry that you feel that way.
Which is the worst non-apology in the whole world. Yeah. Coming from Tuvok is so perfect. Yeah. You're right. He is playing just, you know, what that does, that opens up the world of Vulcans so much more. It makes you realize that there are nice Vulcans, sarcastic Vulcans, Vulcans full of love, Vulcans full of hate, and they're all trying to be without emotion.
Yeah.
But all of those things are emotion. That is fascinating. Yeah. So sarcasm, it's not a depth of emotion, but it makes you think, oh, he's irritated.
Yeah, it's a hint to something. What about you? What about who's your favorite person on Voyager?
Well, obviously it's gotta be Q. Occasionally,
oh,
it's
sure.
You know, Q will sweep in and create. Like, he'll want to undo whatever he did, but he can't undo whatever he did. And he's just like, oh, you still remember that? And this seriously reminds me of some family members where it's just like, no, why would you bring that up? That happened like, I don't know, 3 years ago. That happened 30 years ago. My family's a big fan of, you're not seven anymore. Get over it.
Yep.
And I like Q a great deal. I always like it. I forget the name. I haven't watched Voyager in so long. The Native American first officer.
Chakotay.
Yeah, Chakotay. Chakotay?
Chakotay? Chakotay? They go back and forth. It feels like everybody has their own pronunciation of it.
Fair enough. And
yeah, he's good. He's great.
He's good. He just seems, you know, like he's sort of the perfect. He's kind of like Frakes.
Yes.
But he has that parallel. He's like, I'm supposed to be the first officer, so I am incredible. I'm very supportive of my superior.
Yeah.
But I also have to confront my superior. So I like that dynamic. I love an ensemble cast,
mm-hmm.
And I do like a team out in space.
Yeah.
So
speaking of Frakes,
mm-hmm.
We didn't get to talk about him before, but I think he's. I think I like him. I think I like Riker more than I like Data. I think because he's such this sort of weird, swaggery sort of character who also plays the trombone, which is.
You know. It's like, did that get you any action?
Yeah,
there possibly.
Seems to have.
Sure.
That's how good at the trombone he is. He's let's see, Frakes. Frakes is also captivating. In as much as like it's weird the way that he like plays the instrument of that character where
yes.
It goes it's super intense, super smarmy, charming, sexy, does all of these different things with this character, and it's very believable and watchable. And I think we also decided he looks the most like a giant cat, like a giant house cat.
Oh, right. I think he feels like he's probably pretty hirsute underneath all those clothes.
Yeah.
I bet he's a hairy, hairy dude.
I think I read somewhere that they had to like digitally remove back hair from him and some, you know.
Something.
Yeah, some scene.
It was pre the men getting waxed.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were just like, it's actually distracting. We're going to have to digitally remove that.
Yeah.
But he is, I liked him. I always thought whenever he was playing that smarmy character or that sexy character, I was always like, oh, I don't like him as much. But it was, I think, an interesting, they had to do something with all of them, right?
Yeah.
And like I wanted, like Picard, obviously, on Next Trek, it was always Picard. Picard was my favorite, you know? I didn't like him when he, like, I haven't watched Picard on CBS Plus.
Yeah, me either.
Because I didn't like him when he wasn't making executive decisions. I think he's an excellent executive decision maker.
Right.
You know,
so when, seeing him putter around the wine, the vineyard.
Him as an old man. I'm good. I'm sure he's fun to go out to lunch with, but you know, I want to see him face adversity. He does it in the X-Men. He does it in Star Trek. That's the guy. That's the character I like. So
I have a friend who told me this story like ages ago. So I'm gonna get all the details wrong. But okay. here's what sticks
grain
in my mind.
Grain of salt. Yes.
Exactly. This is like when he was like living in Brooklyn. I think it was kind of this big thing that, you know, Patrick Stewart's living in Brooklyn and he's all over social media looking kind of fun and crazy and all that stuff. But my friend Reagan ran into him at a bodega or something.
In real life.
In real life. He's just there getting his, you know, deli sandwich or whatever it was. And she's like awestruck. It's because it's Picard, right? And he's there.
Right.
And she was like, and the thing about Patrick Stewart is that for an old guy, he's super ripped, you know? Like,
yeah.
So he's got big arms, right? And so she can see his arms. And she said that, as she tells it, that she like was reaching her hand out like this or instinctively. And he caught her and went and looked at her and went, "You may." Yeah. And she got to touch his arm.
Oh my God. That is, first of all, let's unpack this because Patrick Stewart, gym rat. I would not have called that he was just like a guy who wants to lift.
Yeah.
And here's the good news about that story, that he was okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because you shouldn't touch people.
No.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I saw William Shatner on the street and I followed him for almost two blocks. And then I was like, "What are you doing? Leave him alone." And I went away. I didn't.
That's probably smart with Shatner. I don't know what you're going to get from.
You don't know what you're going to get from anyone.
Yeah.
But you're right about Shatner. I did not know. I will say that and I've told this story 1,000 times. The one time I worked with Lily Tomlin, I was running by, we were on the lot, and I ran by her dressing room and she poked her head out and she actually remembered my name. And went, "Where are you going, Jackie?" And I said, "To look for famous people on the lot." And she said, "What am I?" And chopped liver. And I said, and I stopped and she goes, "Nope, keep going." And so she didn't want to hang out. She just wanted to make fun of it gently.
Mm-hmm.
And then just sort of, but it was one of my favorite interactions with the famous.
I get so nervous anytime I actually see a celebrity in person. And like, I don't have it in me to go up and talk to anybody. I mean, like, even, you know, like I'm a fan of yours, Jackie, and this is very nerve-wracking.
Oh, good Lord.
At least we had like, okay, we can talk about Star Trek at least.
We have something, so many things in common, Adam
right.
Bozarth. By the way, I am talking to Adam. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about who I'm talking to. Rangers, lefthandedradio.com.
Yes.
Adam Bozarth, you guys, Bozarth. You guys have sketches and stuff I saw on the website, too,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
We have podcasts, sketches.
We do. It's sketch and improv these days. It used to be like all sketch. We used to put out like a sketch album's worth of material every month. And that's a lot of work. And
smokes. That's
so
insane.
Yeah, we took a couple of breaks. Year breaks here and there because it's a lot of work and then you have to pay your bills and
right. And you could, but everybody could go into the vault, right? Is it still up? Everything's
the vault
still up?
Is available on Patreon. So we put it behind the paywall.
Everybody's, so, I mean, different tiers. I have a Patreon with Lori Kilmartin, by the way, Rangers, just a donation button, knock yourselves out. But, the Patreon for Lori Kilmartin, we don't do anything.
Yeah.
On the Patreon.
Yeah.
So we don't have any tiers. So my whole thing is everyone has a dollar. if they're listening to the Jackie and Laurie show, just set, you know, and by the way, Rangers, you could all set up a monthly on PayPal where I don't have to, and then I'll get 88 cents of that dollar because they take 12 cents. But so Patreon, I don't know what your tiers are like, but is it the basic tier to get the vault?
$5 for the vault, but $1 you'll also get episodes early when we get them done early, and a handful of bonus material that we don't put up on the regular feed.
So if you guys end up going to Left Handed Radio and liking it, it's, you know, we're talking $60 a year, which is not, it's not even a cup of coffee, really.
Yeah, hop on, so, hop off, you know, like.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah, hop on for a month. Try to binge, you guys. Do whatever you can, and then bail and come back.
Listen for free. That's all I care about. I want more people listening to this thing. It takes a lot of work. Anna and I work really hard on it. We get a lot of fun people to get involved. And I think if you're listening to this show, you're going to love our show, too.
Right, because I think that you've both worked a lot with Thrilling Adventure Hour and the Election
Profit Makers. Yeah, we were
Election Profit Makers.
We were doing production for them. Like all the sort of sound design you might expect from Thrilling Adventure Hour is also featured in our show. So if you like old-timey radio.
Old-timey radio, you guys.
I wish there was a better term for that. It sounds awful, right? I mean, old-timey radio.
Right, right.
Doesn't it sound like I'm like opening up a podcast antique mall or something?
It's Joe Biden's old-timey radio. And it's Wolverine's old-time. It's cooler. So, but so people should give it a shot, Left-Handed Radio. What about the currents? Are you trying to keep up with anything after, like, are you doing Scott Bakula? Did you try to do any of that?
I've been told to kind of avoid Enterprise. I've heard Enterprise is supposed to be disappointing.
Scott Bakula's name rhymes with butt crackula. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's I always liked him on Quantum Leap.
Yeah. Well, what's your feeling on Enterprise?
Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it myself. was hoping to get some sort of like a positive feedback loop on that, but nobody's doing it. I've watched the first two seasons of Discovery.
Yeah.
I have not seen the third season yet. I've watched the first season of Lower Decks.
Yes.
Which is just a comedy. That's all it is. It's 22 minutes of animation, and it's kind of adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fan serve.
Yes.
So if you like Star Trek, you should like Lower Decks. Though you might be disappointed that they aren't more on the Lower Decks. They keep going to the bridge.
Yeah, I think it's good. And what's his name? Jack Quaid, who's in it?
Dennis Quaid's kid,
Dennis Quaid's kid, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's in The Boys, but I like him better on this. He captures what I think is good. He does what I think he does well, and a lot of people do this, and I know that you're doing more animation VO stuff, is that it's VO acting is not screen acting.
Right.
VO acting is exaggerated, and you almost have to, it's almost clownish the way you're doing it, because you're using your entire body to get a performance. And I get the sense that he's doing that, which is great. I don't know. You see like any number of things where they cast a celebrity, in a movie to be, you know, some cartoon character. And it's just like, okay, great. Why is it Cameron Diaz playing this character? Like, who cares?
Right. Right. She's not doing anything but talking. Or, sadly, I was just having this conversation on a different podcast about Loki and how Owen Wilson always plays Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
And so Owen Wilson is in the Marvel Universe, you guys. He's not necessarily playing Mobius. He's playing Owen Wilson. And Owen Wilson gets to hang out with Loki, you guys. And so it's very interesting. Yeah, that's a good idea, because I do know that, like, some of the best character actors I know or voiceover actors I know do a lot more. It's almost larger than stage acting, right?
Yes, yes.
Which has to be bigger as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't know what it is. other than the fact that, like, because you don't have the benefit, especially for like a radio show, because you don't have the benefit of seeing anything, you need as many indications as possible within the voice.
Right.
And somehow throwing everything into just articulating it and giving a bunch of different emotional variants throughout your line, it just plays better. Otherwise, it sounds like you're reading.
Yeah, right. I did a sketch series that was just audio.
Yeah.
It was a radio show,
mm-hmm.
and it was about a product that was supposedly going to cure baldness.
Mm.
That created a lot more hair. That was the twist, you guys.
Is this the peanut butter solution?
It was. What is the peanut? Oh, the peanut butter on top of the roof of your mouth, and then the spoon, and then the roof of your mouth.
There's this crazy Canadian children's show. I think this might. I mean, if you're into weird bad movies,
are you Canadian?
No, I'm not Canadian.
Okay.
I'm just.
Would you like to be? I have these paperwork.
Yes,
right here.
Please. Actually, okay, can you fax that
excellent.
Over?
I can.
I'd fit in well there, I think.
Anyway, Canadian show.
It's that same premise where it's like a kid who's bald. He's a kid, and he somehow he gets this magic recipe to grow hair, and it's peanut butter and a bunch of other stuff, and he puts it on, and the hair won't stop growing. But
sure.
The rest of the whole story in the movie is fairly psychedelic in the way that it unfolds. It's just a very
it called?
It's called the peanut butter solution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
My apologies.
No,
okay,
it's
the peanut
fine.
Butter.
Sure. We're here to educate.
Finally, I've learned something. No, this thing it was I played the scientist who was the mother of the of a kid, mm-hmm. a guy who gets all the credit for making it.
Okay.
And then ends up all of these sort of incel QAnon guys, which is of course sweeping the bald does not necessarily make them incels or QAnon. I have a very controversial theory about the bald, which is that it's God's way of getting rid of that hair because you got a good looking head. But in the sketch series,
yeah.
I played the scientist who invented it. My son releases it too soon, and so there's a great deal of then these QAnon guys kind of adopt him, and then he's like, "Wait, you're QAnon guys? You're gross!" And he's bald, and so I have to come up with an antidote for it. But they kidnap it. It's a very silly, very fun little sketch, and I will try to find it and repost it. It might be called the Balding Solution. We don't know. It could have been very simple, and just called that. But yeah, that was a voice. That was a cool voiceover thing that I had to do as the scientist, and so I had to make it sort of momish but nerdish.
Yeah.
So who plays the like? I think that they have a lot of great character actors playing sort of the bridge actors in Lower Decks.
Yeah, like Jerry O'Connell, I think is. Like the first
who's the mom
officer?
Captain? I can't remember the mom because Jerry O'Connell.
Gosh,
I think that first officer is kind of based on Frakes.
Yes, he's very
like,
Frakes-y.
But just different, you know. And I like the Data character on that one with the guy, you know, the two engineers who only want to talk to each other about climbing through the Jeffries tubes. That's
yeah.
it.
Oh, that's yeah. That's Eugene Cordero,
okay.
Who plays Sam Rutherford. Oh, Don Lewis is the captain.
Okay.
Don Lewis. Eugene, I'm a little sort of familiar with because he was at UCB around the same time I was.
Oh, cool.
He was also involved in this. I think this is like the perfect place to talk about this. But he was he used to do this show that I was involved in at UCB called Cage Match.
Oh yeah,
which you know is I think they did it here in Los Angeles where it's just two teams competing for votes and the next very simple. But in New York, it was hosted by a fake pro wrestling league called the UCBW.
Oh
yeah!
Wow!
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
I was in a tag team called the Mountain Men with my friend John Robert Wilson, and we were just two hillbillies. At one point, we were up against a priest and a tag team of a priest and Kirk Cameron, because my friend Alan has a passing resemblance to Kirk Cameron. And Kirk Cameron's
just passing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. His finishing move was to summon God to
right, because Kirk Cameron he's just hit that glass ceiling. There's just one more job.
Yeah.
And it's God. There. And if he could just summon him.
So he summons God, and it would always be the finishing move for months and months and months, and then for the big pay per view, which was just all wrestling on a Saturday night at midnight. I was able to reverse it, put God into a bulldog, and then fall back, and tragically God's neck was broken and died on the way to the hospital. It's like, that's the kind of show we were doing.
Right. If I remember correctly, that cage match did get super dark very quickly. Mm-hmm. I have a question about improv as we weed off.
Yes.
Again, as is happens on the Dork Forest so often. When you write something in improv that is clearly hilarious.
Yeah.
Do you ever take that and flesh it out and turn it into sketch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that's sort of what
it feels like a waste if you wouldn't, right?
Yeah, I think there was
not a waste. People saw it.
There was I don't know, maybe it was like a mass delusion that people in my generation were under, but we didn't do that as much. Like, I think anytime somebody would try to hey, we should do this is that, it would be like, why? Improv's all about making stuff up every time.
And in the moment, don't think.
Don't.
And you're like, or don't create something that's lasting.
Yeah.
It's in the moment, and that's very beautiful. But one of the great things about stand-up is that when you come up with something in the moment, you're like, oh, I'm going to be doing that. That's going into the vault.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull that out whenever I get in trouble.
Yeah.
Especially heckler stuff and stuff like that. So.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's good to know.
Improv is it's made to do that. Like, that's the whole reason you're supposed to be doing that. And that's why they were doing it at Second City as a writing, idea generation tool. And the fact that, a lot of what I was seeing, at least in my perspective, the ethos around me was just sort of like, no, man, you know, if you're funny, then you go out there and you create a new thing every time. And then, because obviously it's all talent based, you know what I mean? You're going to go right to the top. And it's like, you know, at the end of a improv team's run, you kind of go like, well, I don't have anything to show for all that time. So
that's sort of
where the idea for doing a sketch podcast came from, was just like, I did a lot of work on this one thing and I have nothing to show for it. And I'd like to not do that anymore.
Right. And there's some of that stuff can be mined for so much more. They're rich. They're what Maria Bamford calls a rich vein.
Yes.
That's a rich vein. You're going to want to get in there and tap it.
What's your experience with improv, Jackie? Have you done any of it?
When I first started doing stand-up, there was a guy who came and tried to teach us how to do improv, and it was all those games. It was 1985, 1984, so it was freeze tag and some game called 184. And it was 184 was a joke setup thing. 184 somethings walk into a bar, the bartender says blah. And then it probably has another name now, but And then there was, I think, a good 10 years, 15 years when it wasn't okay to even like improv as a stand-up.
Yes.
Because it had been vilified. You're just like, what do you care? And and so when I first moved to Los Angeles, I remember there was a weird sort of Best Western over on Vermont that had stand-up in a basement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it used to also have sketch sometimes and improv. And one night there was improv, and the comics took it upon themselves to yell really. There's a game where you give a country,
yeah,
and then the person has to do a scene in the accent, sort of an English accented. And so we, and I was part of this. I'm not the hero of this story. We picked six different African nations and just kept yelling out different African nations.
Mm-hmm.
And the sketch group only had one African accent. So they became very angry.
Yeah.
And but I did take improv. I took UCB. I took the first series. And it turns out improv, much like stand-up, is a learned experience, skill.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going to watch one of the things at UCB is you have to go watch a lot of improv.
Yeah.
And I got an appreciation of it that I had never had before because, for example, watching Sean Conroy.
Yes.
And Matt Besser do stand-up comedy, do improv.
Yeah.
At no time did you feel like that, because you know when you first do stand-up, this is true when I saw first doing improv, people just throw stuff at the wall. And yeah, a lot of it shows really the inner workings of your fucking mind. And and you might be an asshole.
Yeah.
So yeah, you throw gross things, you throw, you know, in general, you throw dick jokes and gross things at the wall.
Yeah.
And if you're kind of a monster, you could get really sexist or racist or stuff like that. At no time did you feel like Sean Conroy was not in control of the narrative.
Yeah.
He was just literally going to go into his life. You were going to suggest anything.
Yeah.
A bicycle built for two.
Yeah.
And then he was going to either talk about the song, bicycles, two people, you know, fixing bicycles. Like, it could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like his past, the future, a book he read 9 years ago. And it was never – I felt safe.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the best improv is, yes, when you don't feel unsafe. You feel like it could be amazing, but you don't feel unsafe.
Yeah. There's a thing I think maybe was missing from my improv education until later is the, like, reliance on your own self. Like, I think, like you were saying about throwing all the awful stuff out there, you know, transgressive comedy has been really popular for a very, very long time. And it works because it's almost like you're shocking somebody into laughing, that you're saying something so inappropriate that, you know, in polite society, it's
right,
it's funny. I can't believe that guy's that rude. I can't believe that guy's, yes, such an asshole. And then when you're, yes, but when you're stuck in a scene with somebody like that, and the training is just, no, agree with them and then add to it, then it's like two relatively normal people who might be a little bit of an asshole on the inside somewhere to just unleashing the worst things that they can say at each other.
Right.
And it's, yeah, boring.
Right. It ends up being super boring if you can't sort of have the real conversation about what you just said.
Yeah.
That would actually be kind of hilarious,
mm-hmm,
if you weren't trained to just yes and.
Yeah.
If you could, yes, that is an opinion, and let's discuss how that isn't a good opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
And were you trained at some point to be able to bring it around to something that wasn't horrible?
I think I got a lot of good advice from a handful of UCB teachers, and I took a class at the Annoyance toward the end of my, you know, living in New York. Mm-hmm. Which was more about, like, you know, when you go on stage, wear your character like a thin veil, be yourself, but make those little tiny tweaks. Like, you know, if somebody says you're Frankenstein, just be you, but understand that you're, you know, stoned together or stitched together from constituent parts, and you've been brought to life with electricity and all that other shit, you know, but be you and see where it goes. And then Annoyance was very good about, like,
that's
you
great,
deserve to be on stage. You have something to say. You are unique. We're, yeah, excited that you're on stage.
That's a great message. That's, I mean, the thing is because somebody just said to me, I asked, there was a comic who some banana head on Facebook. I posted a political thing literally just an article. And mm-hmm, so he did a lateral move, this comic this other comic, and he was from an area that I have done stand up. So I asked another comic who's there. I was like, "Do you know this guy?" And he goes, "Yes, you're going to want to try to get away from that guy. He's not horrible. He's a little, and it, this is a black comic telling me about this white comic. He said, he's a little racist, but your best bet is to just ignore him. He's one." And I said, "Is he any good?" He goes, "He was funny when it was enough to just be an asshole to be funny." And which is shock jockey kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. And it's just, it's such a good, like, because people do deserve, like, everyone deserves to have a podcast. Everyone deserves to be heard.
Yeah.
And it's so, but if you take that, that's just a great message. I like that message.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah.
What, we've digressed from Star Trek. Are you watching any of the currents?
No, I think once we wrap up with maybe just Voyager or it gets pulled from Netflix, I think we're going to start watching Discovery because I hear it's really good. And the guy that plays Clem Fandango from Toast of London is in it. So I'm excited.
Who does he play?
I don't remember the name of the character.
Right.
Have you seen Toast of London? Are you into the British comedy at all?
The greatest British comedy I've recently seen, and this is a sketch group, I guess, who has a sitcom out, and it's on HBO Max, and it's called Ghosts, plural.
Okay, yeah.
It's a sitcom. It took me 3 episodes, like it all does with sitcoms. They're all 22 minutes apiece, and there's two seasons, and it is hilarious, adorable,
yeah,
and wonderful. What is Toast of London?
Do you know Matt Berry at all? Are you not, I mean, like not personally, are you aware of Matt Berry?
I've heard the name. What
he's
is that?
In What We Do in the Shadows. He's Laszlo in that. He's, he's, also in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. If you've ever seen that, which if you haven't, if, especially if you haven't seen it, Jackie, I think you'd love Dark Place. Exactly. It's, the premise of Dark Place is that it's Garth Marenghi is this horror author who's very down market, but somebody gave him his own TV show where it's set in this haunted hospital where all this paranormal shit happens. But the production values are, you know, shoestring. The producer is his publisher who cannot act, played by Richard Ayoade. And it's just this big mess, and there's little like interview segments where they're just talking about what it was like to make the show. One of the actresses has disappeared since, you know, nobody knows what happened to her. But Matt Berry's in that. I think it's one of his first big things. But Toast of London is Matt Berry as a actor named Stephen Toast. He's the worst actor in London, and so he's constantly being cast in the worst play currently running in the West End or some awful commercial or something. But every episode opens with him at a VO booth doing some of the worst VO gigs ever. Where like one of them is just.
But he keeps working?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
He gets the worst jobs, but he does keep working. Like one of the bits is like him. He's got a script and all it says on it is yes. And they're like, "Can you keep doing it, Stephen?" Yes. 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 Steven, can we get a no?
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's how long is Toast of London? Is it an hour?
22 minutes, 4 seasons, 6 episodes each. So
okay.
You can
and Dark Place? How is that also sitcom?
One season, yeah, sitcom, yeah. You're gonna
okay.
Yeah.
I will give that a shot. I recommend
love giving
Ghosts.
You homework. This is amazing.
I have been trying to watch. I don't understand how I could have run out of positive television. All that's left is everything super sad, incredibly well written, incredibly well acted.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Can't watch it. I think I've established that we're in the laziest Civil War ever.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to watch something a little lighter.
Yeah.
I've watched all of, I'm rewatching Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, which is an Australian murder mystery show and a New Zealand murder mystery show called Brokenwood. I'm also rewatching those. And though there's new episodes of those, which is great. Yeah. Brokenwood, Amazon Prime, probably on Acorn or BritBox or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Brokenwood. It's Columbo, but set in New Zealand. In a town, hilariously, at one point they tell us that it's the only town in New Zealand that did not shoot any Lord of the Rings. So you got to love that. Anyway, so, but I, yeah, you... every time I do a Star Trek episode, I want to go back and watch them. Did you ever go back? Have you tried any of the original series at all?
Well, there's that episode of Deep Space Nine where they are thrown back in time and are inserted into the Tribble episode. So we watched that one just as a point of reference. And
sure.
It's also that one. That one's weird because it's supposed to be funny, but it has all the trappings of 1960s comedy. So there's just, you know, disaster unfolding while some
it's tragic for the Tribbles. It's like this is not yeah, like all the ones I really liked in the original series are usually the Greek and Roman ones when they go to that planet where they meet the gods.
Yeah.
And then they go to this other planet. And I loved it because Spock was my favorite. Huge crush on Spock when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
Who didn't? And, you know, when he's forced to kiss somebody, that was always important to me. And I was like, yeah, get him. And when he has, and then I consistently mix up Ponfar and parkour. So parkour is when you have to jump all over buildings and then you're forced to make out with someone. But Ponfar is when you're forced to make out with someone, but you have to get through an obstacle course to do it. So, and then have you watched any of the movies?
Yeah, we watched Generations and First Contact.
Sure, sure.
So the good ones.
Well, there's. I would watch. I believe the original Star Trek movies. It starts with. I think the good ones are 3 and 5. There's some sort of the odd ones are the good ones, mm-hmm. or I'm entirely wrong, and the even ones are the good ones because it can't be the odd ones because Star Trek the movie was terrible.
Okay,
so it's good if you want to watch something that's so bad it's good. It's one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's when you're desperate for just a little more Star Trek. I've watched it several times, but it isn't. It's nowhere to start. Do you have a reason to start?
Are you into the J.J. Abrams movies? Do you like those?
They're okay.
Yeah.
Matt Weinhold ruined them for me by saying that they were Star Wars turned into Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like when you watch Discovery, you'll be like, this is Star Warsy. Why is it so Star Warsy? It turns into Star Trek. The first season is super action packed.
Yeah,
and so it's really good,
mm-hmm.
But it isn't super Star Trek-y until the last two or three episodes.
Okay,
where all of a sudden you're like, okay, now I get it. Second series of Discovery, entirely Star Trek-y and awesome, and then when I get it because I like Star Wars. I mean, The Mandalorian. Absolutely nothing happens, but I'm on board because who doesn't want a distressed, you know, I found this knife on the ground outside my house on a walk.
Uh-huh.
And it looks very Mandalorian. I've cleaned it up a little bit, but it has, and all it is it's some sort of carpentry knife, but it is incredibly terrifying.
Yeah.
Because it also has the serrated edge to it. But it's really good at I found it. I tried to give it to somebody. Like this was deep in quarantine time, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I go to the guy working. He's just running this parking lot. I'm on a walk, right? So I go up to the parking lot guy and I was like, hey, I found this. And he's like, I still have mine. And he pulls the exact same knife out. And I was like, well, do you think somebody dropped it? He was like, you should keep that because there's going to be trouble coming.
Whoa.
Hi.
Whoa.
Wow. Okay, sir. Anyway, okay. In other news, I used it to cut a peach this morning.
Pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should not be armed. My middle name is Chekhov. So that is a new joke. I have this to say, Adam Bozarth.
Yes.
We have talked for an hour, and it has been fascinating. A lot of Star Trek, a lot of other things. Everybody, you should go check out lefthandedradio.com. Lefthandedradio.com has a lot of different stuff on it.
Yeah.
And if you like Dork Forest, you probably are going to like Left Handed Radio. So thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I can't believe it's been an hour already.
I know. Super fun. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?